Hi everybody, and welcome to the last presentation of Hot Storage. So as the title suggests, we are doing energy optimization. So there's a remote connection between storage and energy right now, but we hope we're going to find something more. So as you probably all know, let's say energy efficiency is one of the most important characteristics of computer systems today. So we have the impression that the data center cost, around one third of it, is electricity. So there's also another thing which is called the thermal density, which reduces the number of electronic devices that you can put inside a certain room, for example, because there's no way to cool them. So everybody are pushing towards this direction in order to optimize everything. So in parallel, there has been a lot of work in idle energy optimization. That is the essentially shutting down parts of electronic equipment. For example, if you don't use, the processor, then you can shut some cores down. And servers are actually very, very good today at being idle. For example, the latest Intel Sandy Bridge processor consumes only 10 watts when being idle doing nothing. And it's called the Intel C-State. So the active energy optimization is actually the most challenging part. So doing, let's say, the same work with less energy. So in parallel, also, there's a lot of work in CPU-intensive applications. But in this work, we are going to focus on high-intensive applications. We are going to point some problems in today's, optimization schemes. And we are going to propose something new, hopefully. So in terms of active energy reduction, there is the dynamic voltage and frequency scaling today only in processors. So there is no other device that supports something like that. We hope the memory will do it in maybe the next generation of Intel Haswell processors. And for Intel, it's called the Intel P-States. Essentially, what you are doing is you are trying to do the same work with less energy by trading performance. With energy. So IO intensive applications tend to be much more, good for this purpose, because the performance gap between the processor and the IO devices, especially solid state disks, are, in the order of 100, so two orders of magnitude. And the DVFS starts to, inside the processor, starts to propagate, so you can start closing, throttling down the cache, also, of course, the cores, the integrated GPUs that exist inside the processors, hopefully the DRAM as we talked before. So the scheme today is that the operating system coordinates the DVFS states, so that those Linux governors. And the principle of the operation is that they rely on the CPU utilization, the percentage of the CPU utilization. So there's a slight problem with that, because those governors have been designed maybe 10 years ago, when the CPU was roughly 90 or more percent of the total power consumption of the system. So today, those things have changed. We think that we have measured that CPU is 50 or less, 50% on servers or less. So we have measured that the storage and the memory consume the rest, and the storage starts to push all the way up to 20% and maybe more. So we have four standard governors. We have the on-demand governor, which actually operates under the min-max scheme. So you have a threshold in the CPU utilization, and if you're under this threshold, you just put the minimum frequency. If you're over this threshold, you put the maximum frequency. You have the smartest one, which is the conservative, is the most adaptive out of four. So you have a range of frequencies, and depending on the load, you select just one of them. You have the power save and the performance governors, and they just set the frequency to the minimum or the maximum. So in our work, we have identified some very, we think, very important points. The first one is the CPU utilization. Is this a correct metric for setting the frequency of the processor? Well, we think it's not, because, for example, if you have the buffer gas and you have an application and some of the requests hit this buffer gas, then the CPU utilization of the system tends to grow, because the system cannot take the thread out of the running queue, and it, for some short period of time, it appears with 100% utilization. So the CPU utilization is misleading today because the memory is getting bigger and bigger and bigger. So most of the applications will be on this, let's say, category of misleading the governors. So in this situation, we say that the governors are pretty powerless. You cannot do anything about that. There's also this thing that we discussed before. Now the systems are energy proportional. So the CPU and the other peripherals tend to use somehow the same percentage of the power. And the governors were not designed for that. So you can have a governor that slows down the application so much that in the end you consume more energy than just letting the processor run with the maximum speed. Besides that, we have also new metrics. People are starting to ask for new metrics. In the old days, you had only the power consumption. The power consumption metric starts to grow because you want a machine to have power cap. You want the machine to have power cap in order to do, let's say, worst case analysis to your data center. You have, of course, the raw energy, which is your bill. In the end, it's the money that you pay. And in mobile devices, it's the time that your battery will last. But you also have balanced metrics like the energy delay product, which is, let's say, how much performance you're going to sacrifice and how much energy you're going to gain, and also the energy per instruction, which is more fine-grained than the other one. So, as we told before, the memory DVFS is hopefully on the way. So, there's an obvious problem about that with today's governors, because they do not support anything like that, or for any other peripheral than the processor. Now, what we have done is we run some applications. For this presentation, we present two of them, the TPCW with 36,000 emulated clients, and the TPC8, the standard query 3. And we record the energy consumption of the governors versus, let's say, we try all the frequencies of the processor. We select one static frequency, we keep it for the rest of the execution, and we compare it against the governors. So this is nowhere near the optimal, but we're going to see that the governors perform even worse than selecting one frequency for all the execution of the program. So it's really bad. So our hardware setup is a 4-core Intel i5 Sandy Bridge processor with 16 gigabytes of RAM, and we have also two SSDs connected via an LSI controller. Now, the hardware instrumentation scheme seems looks like this. So we have the power supply unit. You have three main power supply lines. You have the 5, the 12, and the 3.3. And we cut the wires. We put analog sensors that we mark over there. Those are analog, so we have to build a board that makes the conversion from analog to digital. We filter them. So we do the conversion at 40 kilohertz, and when the data are ready, we interrupt the processor at the rate of 1 kilohertz, and we have the data. So with this scheme, we isolate the SSDs, so we measure them separately, the DRAM, the processor, and the other peripherals. So it's a pretty good scheme in order to measure your system. So the first one is the raw energy of the total system for the TPCW. So on the x-axis, we have the frequency. So from 1.6 to 3.3 gigahertz, and on the y-axis we have the total energy of the system, the total energy consumption. So with the red dot over there, we have the best frequency that we have found in order for the whole execution of the program. And over there is the conservative and the on-demand governors that they choose the maximum frequency, the 3.3, because the CPU utilization is close to 100%. So this is 12% more than a static selection of the frequency. For the power save, we see it's 18%, it's even worse, because the application is being slowed down so much that, it's a distraction over there. So for the energy delay product, we observe somehow the same. So it's 10% and 100% increase for the power save, 10% for the conservative and the on-demand. And again, the best static frequency is 2.8 gigahertz. So the same stuff happens to the TPCH query 3. For the power save, we observe an increase of 16%, 12% for the on demand, which is the default governor in Linux system, and just 4% is close to the optimal. The conservative one is pretty good. So in energy delay product, we have 80% increase in power save, 45%, which is really annoying in the default governor, and just 5% in conservative. But again, this is all, let's say, against one selection for the whole execution of your application, which is maybe it's really bad. So in the end, as a summary, we have that the CPU utilization is a very, very misleading, let's say, metric in order to regulate the CPU frequency. So other peripherals should be accounted in order to, let's say, to make a governor. And in this little table, we have the power save governor is very bad if you want to conserve energy. The conservative is not so good, but it could be it's decent, and the on demand is pretty bad. So the question is if we can perform better than that, and we think that we can break the application into phases. So there's a very, very good paper from Kantruk Iski and other authors in Micro 2006 saying and proving that you can break your program into phases in very, very short intervals. So you can identify many, many short phases. So what we are proposing is to take those phases, to take a phase detection algorithm, which uses the runtime power information and the performance information of your system, and optimize for its phase independently. So in fact, as a rough approximation of what we're trying to do, each phase can be either CPU-bound, memory-bound, or I/O-bound. But this scheme is just a rough approximation for you to keep it as a rule of thumb, something like that. So the optimal DVFS is different for each phase. So if you have an I/O-bound application, you can slow down your processor as much as you want, because probably the peripheral will be very, very slow for you. If it's memory bound, then probably you can slightly reduce the maximum frequency. And if it's CPU bound, then probably the best solution is to just to keep the maximum frequency as the best one. So the trick with I/O bound applications is that because of the performance gap, the phases are much, much longer. So there are better opportunities in order to optimize your application. So on this small figure, we present maybe the intuition of FTIO, which is on the left you have the FTIO and some memory in order to store the information that we discover at runtime. And what we are going to do is, as soon as we get a new phase, we are going to test all the frequencies by brute force. So we are going to test them. We are going to measure how much energy or what is the EDP of the run with this frequency, and we're going to store inside a small memory segment to just to remember them. So we set the CPU frequency, and then we observe what has been done with this frequency. So we do it for all frequencies. We keep the best for the rest of the phase. So actually, we go down to the application, we break it, and we perform, let's say, a more fine-grained optimization. So this is our concept. And for example, here we have a very, very simple application, which is the NSORT application. So on the y-axis, you can see the power consumption, and the x-axis, the time. So it's just a regular time series. And this NSORT exhibits two phases. The one is I/O bound. The other one is processor bound. So the processor requests the data from the SSD, just sitting and wait. But in fact, we see that the conservative governor, which is the one with the X mark, doesn't set the clock to the minimum, because, as we told before, it's so defective. And as we can see, we can decrease the frequency to the minimum with no performance penalty at all. So for the phase two, what we are doing is we set the frequency to the max because it's processor bound. But this is completely intrusive. Like we have, as soon as we discover a new phase, what we are going to do is we're going to have an array like this, and we're going to go from, let's say, 3.2 gigahertz towards the minimum frequency, and we're going to record let's say the energy consumption that has been observed. So in the end, we are going to identify that the best operating frequencies, for example, is 2.8 GHz, and we're going to keep that for the rest of the phase. So we believe that this scheme is pretty good. But So as a future work, we're going to adapt FTIO to multi-threaded applications, because currently there is no scheme that supports per core DVFS. So you cannot set the voltage and the frequency of each core independently on your die, because the voltage regulator is outside the chip. Hopefully this is going to change with the new Haswell, because they are going to integrate the voltage regulator inside the die. So we might see in the next generation per core DVFS, which is very important for multi-threaded applications. So the second challenge for multi-threaded use of such schemes is you cannot, let's say, do per-thread energy accounting. So you don't know exactly what is the energy that is consumed from each thread. So this is an ongoing work from a lot of people, and hopefully we are going to have some good results in the future. The next point is that we can use control theory, because actually this is a controller. You have a feedback, and you do some actions, and we can use let's say control theory to ensure stability of the operation. So the third thing is that if you have one dimension, so you have the CPU DVFS. If you have memory DVFS and you have lots of peripherals that support, let's say, scaling down the frequency, you have a very, very large parameter space that if you are going to set it by brute force, then you're not going to do anything with that. So there is also ongoing work about that, and hopefully, they're going to have something good. So in conclusion, if you want to take something from this presentation, then we have shown in the paper that that today's governance in the Linux system has severe flaws because they don't account for all the peripherals in the system. The design does not fully optimize for IO applications, and they are missing very, very critical features that are going to come in the future. So we propose FTIO, which actually breaks the program into phases and uses energy feedback in order to find the best energy or EDP or energy per instruction metric in order to optimize this one. So we hope that's going to be ready for next generation power management capabilities. And thank you.
So your feedback controller is based on using measurements of power consumption using some added monitoring techniques, and that requires some specialized hardware, which I could imagine might become available soon. But in the meantime, can we use this based on the existing things we have to measure power usage of the CPU and other peripherals?
Yeah, of course. I have a slide for that. So there is all the new processors from Intel. SIP with a new characteristic, which is they report their own energy consumption. So they have an up counter, and it reports very, very with fine-grained the energy consumption of the system. So you have for the CPU, and you have now for the servers, for the memory. So you have the two basic components, and hopefully we're going to see for the I/O devices. But also you can use something like this, which is a linear model. So you can model your whole system with basically a few parameters with a good accuracy. Well, it's not perfect, of course, but let's say here we have fitted a linear model in the previous system, and you have the SSD for the read, the write, because they use different power when you read and you write. And you also have a model for your cores, for your processor, and for your memory. So you have a full system model. So you can use something like that, which can be even trained automatically.
Great, thank you.
Do we have any other questions?
So what can, the memory is a relatively large amount, if you have a large memory, right? It's a relatively large fraction of the thing. What do you think can be done there to, you know, it seems like memory is the kind of thing where, you know, oh, caching, I might need it in the next 5 minutes, you know, maybe it'll be 20 minutes, and so.
So the performance gap of the memory between the processor and the memory allows you to slow down your processor a little bit at the speeds that we are now. So it's good if you're memory bound, then it's good for, you can do good memory good energy optimization.
No, sorry, I guess my question was a little bit different. So you the usage of the memory, if you cut the memory in half, the application probably doesn't run half as slow.
No.
Right. Because it's probably more fractional, right? If you take away the last few gigabytes, then it just stops running altogether. But it's probably not proportional. Do you have any sense what that curve is?
It's completely dependent on the system. I mean, half, okay, yeah. You might go to the buffer gas a lot. You might need a lot of memory, but your program might have good locality, and you are always served from the cache. So in this situation, no, you never change. If you have very good locality, then you have small performance degradation. It depends. Completely dependent on the system.
Okay. So in your tests, you haven't looked at that?
No. No.
Thanks.
Do we have any other questions? Let's thank the speaker again.